This time on Vet Story.
Forget the guns and all that. I want to hear somebody playing drums. I'm going to find a band someplace. The same group that I had saw in my high school. Now I have the opportunity to try out for that group. And my friend comes out of, his wife comes out of the store. She's like, hey, one of the Temptations are in the store. And she's like, Mr. Williams? He's like, yeah. She's like, do you have a minute? And she turns to me and she's like, just sing. You know, I probably was conceived to one of these records. Every guy on this stage I know could sing Circles Around Me, could dance Circles Around Me. Do you take a chance on yourself or do you continue your career with the military? Just give me that one shot and hey, you make it or you break it.
Welcome to Vet Story. I'm your host, Phil Briggs, and today we're going to talk about the interesting intersection of veterans and music. I recently had a chance to talk to Air Force veteran Terry Weeks, and he told me how he went from this to auditioning for one of the greatest groups in American music, founding fathers to the Motown sound, the legendary Temptations. What's going on, Terry? Thanks for coming on Vet Story.
Hey, how you going, Phil? Thanks for having me.
Always good to have a fellow veteran who's gone on to such great success. And we're going to take a little walk down history lane here with you, but I'm eager to find out more about you because when I had heard that the Temptations have a U.S. Air Force veteran as part of their lineup,
I was
like, what? I have to hear this story.
Of course, when we're riding a bus, we have to swap stories for sure.
Now, before we get to the Motown side of the story, let's start. I read you're from Birmingham, Alabama, which is also the home of some of the other Temptations.
Oh, yeah. And growing up as a young kid, you know, I heard about these stories and I was like, wow, these guys, no way they came from here. But if they did, they were the ones that got out, for sure.
Now, growing up there, of course, you were exposed to their music. I'd imagine along the same veins, you know, if you like the Temptations, you like the Marvin, you like all that, right?
Oh, man, you, all the smooth, the Marvin stuff, that, which is all from the gospel realm, you know, it all was derived from that and just went into rock, it went into R&B, it just went into everything. Because all those elements, you know, are always there in gospel music, and that's the one core thing that we all share in common.
Had you done gospel or did you sing with the church coming up as a kid?
Very little. I was basically a bass guitar. That was my thing. I wanted to be a musician. Didn't care about singing at all. And just purely by chance, a group that I was playing with, gospel group, one of the singers was always late or he never showed up to rehearsal. So I told the guys, I said, hey, you know, I could do what he did. I said, you know, I know the song. I said, I'm not a singer or anything. I said, but I could play it. And I could cover his part. So we went to rehearsals, and everything went well. So I guess the following week, I come back to rehearsal, and there's a bass player there, and I'm looking a little strange. I'm like, hey, what's up? And they're like, dude, we want you to sing. We got a new bass player. We want you to sing. And I was like, dude, I'm not a singer. So I quit the group. Yeah, that's my intro into singing. That's really how I started singing, purely by chance.
And it sounded to me like the way your band worked was in some ways similar to the military. Like, you might not always know what's going on until you get there, and then your commanding officer
exactly.
Just says, hey.
Unbeknownst to me, I guess I was a better singer than bass player.
Right on. Now, your career as an amateur musician was relatively short-lived, and you ended up joining the Air Force. How did that happen?
The weird story is that at my high school, the Air Force band came to my school, and I had no idea that this was an actual job in the military. So when the band got through performing, I spoke to one of the guys that was in the band, and I said, hey, how does this work? He said, well, you know, we're actually enlisted guys, and we try out for the band, and this is our actual job. And I said, you mean to tell me I could enlist, and if I tried out as a singer, that would be my actual job? And he's like, yeah. I said, oh, dude, I'm in. Man, I couldn't wait to get to a recruiter. I went down to a recruiter's office, and I was like, dude, I'll sign up for whatever job, but I know where I'm going to end up because that's where I want to go. And ironically, I enlisted fresh out of high school. I actually joined my junior year of high school. I knew exactly what I was going to do. Joined the military, left right out of high school, tried out at the local, talent contest on the base, and went from base level and won and went to the next level. And then, lo and behold, there was a group called Tops in Blue, the same group that I had saw in my high school. Now I had the opportunity to try out for that group. I actually tried out. I made the group. I'm sitting there pinching myself like, wow, I have come full circle, you know, actually seeing the one thing that encouraged me to go into the military to pursue. And here I am doing that very thing a few years later. So it was big for me, and it gave me a lot of confidence going forward.
That's amazing. That's his awesome story. And I've got a colleague here that was also a musical performer, and he was with the Navy, and he toured the world doing something very similar. I have to wonder, that first day, though, of tryouts, or when you're at the recruiter's office even, you know, there's guys there like showing how many push-ups they can do. There's other guys talking about how, you know, what a good marksman they are. And then, like, you know, there you are going, just my imagination.
Right. I'm like, dude. Running away. Forget the guns and all that. I want to hear somebody playing drums. I'm going to find a band someplace. And, man, it absolutely drew me in, and that was the one thing that I had the pleasure of trying out for Tops in Blue and making it. And that just opened my eyes musically, you know, like nothing else. That experience with that group taught me everything I need to know about this business. And it basically gave you all the tools you needed to make the decision whether to go forward in entertainment or, you know, continue your career in the military.
And I would suspect a little bit less toxic of an environment. You know, I mean, odds are necessarily going to be, introduced to a lot of drugs, a lot of partying.
Exactly.
You got to be on base.
And the whole thing about it, Phil, that drew me in with those guys is that it's like, wow, every guy on this stage I know could sing circles around me, could dance circles around me, but they were willing to share their knowledge with me. And I was like, wow, I know that there's no way I could have paid for all the instruction and all the encouragement and everything that they gave us, man. There was no way I could have paid for that in the outside world.
Now, speaking of the outside world, what was going on in the outside world while you were serving? You weren't in the Vietnam era. You would have been after that, right?
It was early 80s, 82 through to 90, to 1990. When I came in, I was just getting out when Desert Storm hit. I just missed Desert Storm by a few months. And I actually, with the Tops in Blue, had the opportunity to perform July 4th. At the same place that the temps are going to be doing here next week. And that was so rewarding for me. I did it as a military member, and now I'm going back and doing it as a civilian member. Man, I couldn't be more delighted with that. I couldn't have planned it and saw it through in no way, but I'm so happy about that.
Let's get to that fateful transition now. So we get out of the Air Force and we're in LA, and I read that you were looking for some show business work, like, you know, so many talented young people do.
You know, here I am. I come with my dream like all the other millions of people come to California.
Right.
And Phil, I promise you, it was it was less than a week. I know that 4 or 5 days we're there. Two of my friends were sightseeing. We're up on Hollywood Boulevard walking around. And my friend comes out of, his wife comes out of the store. She's like, hey, one of the Temptations are in the store. I was like, really? like, wow, I didn't think I would see a celebrity today. You know, silly me, it is Hollywood Boulevard, though.
Right.
And so we went in the shoe store, and he's in there, so we said, we're just going to wait him out. When he comes out, we're just going to be there waiting for him. So a while goes by, he comes outside, and she's like, Mr. Williams? He's like, yeah. She's like, do you have a minute? And she turns to me, and she's like, just sing. And I started singing something, some Donny Hathaway tune. I forget whether he was one of my favorite singers. So I go into it, and Mr. Williams stops. He looks at me like, huh, okay. And he says, so what are you doing here? You here working? I said, no, I'm still in the military. I said, I'm debating whether or not to get out and pursue this, you know, as a career and try this and see where I can go with it. And he said, really? He said, well, look, let's exchange numbers. We exchanged numbers. So we did sightseeing thing and went to Venice Beach and other places later that day. Got home that evening, and he had called and left two messages. Now, this was back when answering machines were the thing. So here it is. You got three grown adults sitting here looking at the answering machine like it's a specimen from space. You're like, what do we do? We plan the message over and over. I was like, well, he did say call him, and I had his number. I was like, wow. Okay, so we had to get our speech together. I was like, what do I say? Well, she was like, just call. So I finally called. I'd start talking to him. Come to find out, his wife that he's with was from Birmingham. I said, you got to be kidding me, man. And we started talking about that and started to say, well, him and his wife, I knew some of the same people. And he said, look, you know, forget all that. He said, look, man, he said, I like what I heard. I'm interested. You know, I want to sign you to my production company, and we can see if we can get you signed and see what we can see. I said, dude, slow down. Are you kidding me? I said, but you only heard the little bit. He said, look, I know what I heard. This is what I do. I've done this all my life. I'm interested. If you are. I said, well, put the contract together, and we'll see what we'll go from there. And just what he said he was going to do, not maybe a month or two later, he sends the contract. Everything's on the up and up. And I only had, I think, about 30 days left, and I decided. I said, hey, well, I'm out of here, guys. Said goodbye. And, you know, you get the speeches like, yeah, weeks, we know. You'll be back in 6 months. And I'm like, dude, I'm out of here. Wherever I am, it won't be back here. I said, I've made this decision. I said, I got to see it through now. And said goodbye to those guys and went forward. Here we are.
There had to be people on that base that were like, man, that boy has got the best luck.
Yeah.
That airman
you know,
weeks.
The crazy part was that years later, when I was with the Temps, we had the opportunity to go back there and perform there in the city. And you wouldn't believe it. There were about four or five of the guys that I was stationed with that were still there. Man, they came out with their families, and you talking about one of the most emotional times. I mean, those guys, they were like, dude, we know we said you would be back, but we didn't know you would come back this way. And I was like, man, I didn't know it either. I said, but I knew I had to try. And I said, everything you guys said to me helped motivate me, helped get me to this point. And I thanked them, man, and I was so happy that they got a chance to see that.
Outstanding. And we had another run of good luck, too, because as I've read your bio here, of course, you're working with a group now. He got you in like a development group or as many record labels do. They put together acts and they try to see, you know, which can get some record charting action and which can make some success.
Right.
And, you know, he's got a lot of horses in the stable, so to speak. And some of them run and some of them don't.
Absolutely.
You got called up to do a fill-in or something with the Temptations. What was that like?
Yeah. The thing was, I was still working on my project. I had a group, a three-member trio, and I was working on my project. And O asked me, he said, hey, look, man, we really need somebody out here to fill that harmony. He said, and I know you can do it. He said, the guys all know you. They're comfortable with you. And I had been in the studio and done work with the guys before also. So I was familiar with everyone. So I came out and I sang in the wings for which was supposed to be a month, and it turned into 10 months. And while I was out, you know, my group wasn't doing anything, and we ended up splitting up. And O turned to me after that 10 months, and he said, look, man, he said, we're auditioning cats as we speak. He said, I'm asking you to stay on. He said, can you dance? I was like, dude, can I dance? I'm built for this. I mean, it's not something I envision seeing myself doing. I said, but I can feel that peg. I can definitely feel that peg for you. And he's like, really? I said, you know, we're talking. I said, let's put the pedal to it. Let's do it and see what happens. And he said, okay, we went forward. And hey, man, like I told him, all I need is the opportunity. That's all I've ever asked for in life and doing anything. Just give me that one shot. And hey, you make it or you break it. I can live with that.
That's awesome.
And hey, man, I went in, did my thing, you know, and it did help that the guys already knew me. They were familiar with me. And they were like, wow, we didn't know you could dance. I was like, well, you didn't ask. I said, but hey, let's do it, you know. So, and it's been such a that Tops in Blue experience basically set me up for this. Man, it was a cakewalk. Because I was familiar with everything that required to fill that position. So basically, Tops in Blue definitely set me up for this perfect situation that fell in my lap. And I tell people, I said, I in no way will ever say to you that talent got me here. I said, a whole lot of luck, knowing certain people and making the right moves. I said, all the stars were aligned and everything for me in that aspect. And I realize it, and I'm taking full advantage of it.
Now, I understand they had to bend one little rule, though, to get you
in. Oh, yeah.
Because you could sing and you could dance, but there was one thing right. You just can't fake. And what was that?
I wasn't tall enough. I just wasn't tall enough. So we fixed that by adding a couple of inches to the heel. And that got me up to par because, you know, I'm standing around all these six-footers and that's what the group calls for. And I was like, wow. But it was funny for me because, I mean, even in sports, everything I had pursued in my life, I'd always been told, well, we don't think you can do it. And I'm like, I've always heard that. I don't mind that because I know what I can do. And I said, look, just give me the shot and we'll be okay.
All right. In addition to asking for your shot, I read that you also asked about the age difference. You asked Mr. Otis Williams about the significant generational difference between you guys.
I was born in 63, and I'm always talking to Mr. Williams and joking with him that I said, dude, you know, I probably was conceived to one of these records, and here I am singing on stage with you. I said, man, that's got to be crazy for you. And he was like, look, he said, man, when we were coming up, we were teenagers, you know, we were living a dream. We had no idea that we would have the impact on the world that they have today.
First of all, thank you. I love that picture you just painted. That is awesome. Now, you've gone on to pick up some accolades of your own. You've gone on to win a Grammy with this variation of The Temptations.
Yep, we did. And I'm standing there like, dude, he's like, come on. This is ridiculous now. You know, I was happy with just getting this far, but now you're throwing this in. You know, we won the Grammy, and I think the same year we won a Soul Train Music Award. And it's like, dude, that's like, this is another level. This is a level that I didn't plan for because between me and you, Phil, I love what I do, but I don't care about, I'm not a celebrity. I always say that. I might be in a celebrity's role, but I'm just not that guy. I'm a normal, run-of-the-mill, everyday guy. And that works for me. It has always worked for me. And that's the way I conduct myself. That's the way I conduct my life and anybody around me.
Now, what was Otis like? Because a lot of his bandmates currently, you know, they weren't there in the 60s when they were winning awards left and right. Was he psyched for you guys or was he like, oh, another Grammy Awards? How many times can I win a Grammy? I've got 100 of them.
Man, Phil, he was on top of the world because that's one thing he had always said to me. He said, man, I want you guys to be able to win the type of awards that I've won over the years and seen the things. And I always tell him, you know, when people stand and clap for me, that's the reward every time for me. That's the Grammy every night for me. You know, I didn't do it for the awards. I mean, they're great to get that, you know, but that's for my peers. Mm-hmm. And we respect that. But we do this purely for the fans, you know, because this music wouldn't be around this long if it wasn't for the fans. So we know that the faces change, you know, and we get a little heavier. We don't have that 28-inch waist anymore, you know, but the music and the respect for it still remains. And that'll always be. As long as I'm a part of it, that will always be.
And as a guy that came up as a fan first, as a young man listening to it growing up through his teens and everything, have you ever had a moment where you hear Otis sort of reminisce about something that happened back in the day? Got any good like David Ruffin stories or little tidbits of the Temptations past?
I always, when we get on the bus, you know, we take those long bus rides. I'm always prodding them and say, hey, you know, how was it this way and this? But there was this one particular story where he told me about the power of music. And he said they were in down in Mississippi, and they were at a theater. And what had happened was, back then it was segregated. You had whites on one side and blacks on the other. And what had happened was some blacks had came in, and they were sitting in the white seat. So when they came in for the seating, it caused a commotion. And he said they had to come out on stage and tell the people, say, look, this music has no color. He said, look, everybody sit where you want and do whatever. He said, but we're not going to start this show until we can conduct ourselves properly as adults. And he told me then, he said he saw the power of music in a whole nother light after that day. He said, wow, this thing can stop people from fighting. He said when the show started, when he looked out in the audience, there was no segregation anymore. Everybody, black and white, was dancing and having a good time listening to the music. And he said that's when it hit him. He said, wow, I chose a very noble profession. And what I just witnessed this night is far powerful than anything he had ever seen in that in his life to that point. Well, you could have been anything that you wanted to, and I can tell the way you do the things you do, the way you do, all day, the way you do the things you do. And he shared that with me, and I was like, wow, incredible.
Oh, that is amazing. And of course, you know, of course, your music was set as the backdrop, the soundtrack, if you will, to the civil rights movement. I mean, it was what people
absolutely
were listening to. That's just a tremendous picture you just painted.
Right. If you didn't experience it, you could experience it through the music because it was telling you everything that was happening in the world at that time. You know, and we both know that those things won't ever happen again. So that was a small microcosm of life at that time. Mm.
I would ask what's next, Terry, but it seems like all your dreams have come true. I mean, are you going to be on the moon next? Or, I mean, what is going to go on?
The thing is, what we're doing right now, and we refer to it as we're caretakers now. We're taking this legacy that is so vast and huge. We're just adding to it, and it's just extending the life and exposing a whole nother generation to it. Because, man, feel that sometimes we look in the audience, and you got four generations that are listening to the same type of music. And it's very rare that that can happen in this day and age.
So true. Well, I thank you for everything. I thank you for the music first and foremost, but it is really inspiring to know that you're a fellow veteran just like I am, and our greatest days can be ahead of us. Any advice to somebody coming up that might think they got a talent, ability, and they want to get out of the military and pursue it?
All you got to do is real simple. If you believe in yourself, you can accomplish whatever. And hey, people around you will say and do all sorts of things, but that self-belief it'll maintain you and it'll catapult you to where you want to go. It absolutely will.
Terry, an absolute pleasure talking to you. I look forward to seeing you guys for the Capitol 4th in Washington, D.C. Your reunion.
Thanks, Phil.
Your return to D.C., if you will. We look forward to seeing you again, man.
Oh, yes, I do. I do. I look forward to it. And thank you for your service today and every day.
Now, you can see Terry alongside Temptations' original member Otis Williams as they tour the country all summer long. They'll even be part of one of the nation's largest 4th of July celebrations in Washington, D.C. The nationally televised special on PBS, A Capital 4th. There, they'll play alongside acts like the Beach Boys and Jimmy Buffett. Special thanks to PBS and Terry Weeks for making the time to talk to us. And we want to thank the Temptations for over 50 years of incredible music. I'm Phil Briggs, and I'll talk to you again on another episode of Vet Story. And you can find all the episodes at connectingvets.com.